The killing of George Floyd, an unarmed black man, at the hands of police has sparked a wave of anger across the United States, an anger that has gone on to define the Black Lives Matter movement. Maisha Cherry, assistant professor of philosophy at the University of California, Riverside, argues that this is no bad thing. In a piece for The Atlantic, she writes that anger is a legitimate response to wrongdoing. It challenges us to achieve political equality, and we can have anger without violence, and violence without anger. Maisha joined me earlier to explore this further, and I started by asking her, what is the purpose of rage?
Well, I think it can have several roles, particularly when one is trying to pursue justice. I think one of the roles is that it can be communicative. And what I simply mean by that, it has a tendency to communicate something, whether that is to the perpetrator or whether that is to the victim. So one of the things that it communicates is that a value, right? So it can communicate that the person who has been mistreated, if a person is responding to anger at their mistreatment, it communicates that that person is valuable, so much so that they do not deserve to be mistreated. And so someone is speaking out, just not at the wrongdoing, but they're speaking to the value of that person that's being mistreated. So it communicates value. And it's very interesting that in the context of these protests, that the slogan is Black Lives Matter. And one of the things that I've been thinking about is that even before the slogan was written, to me, that anger was communicating that value. So in some ways, the slogan is redundant, right? I think when I see anger, I know that it's responding to value, the value of people's lives. So I think that the anger is communicating that value. But it's not only just communicating the value of victims of racial injustice and police brutality, but it's also communicating a value for justice, a value for liberal principles that we, particularly in liberal democracy, say that we hold dear. So I think it's also communicating a value for justice, for racial equality. And it advertises what I think it's doing right now in this moment is communicating to the world that justice is missing, injustice is present. And what people who are angry are doing is trying to communicate that although justice is absent in this moment, it needs to be here. It is valuable, is worthy to be in this moment. So I think it's communicative. But I think another role that anger has, not only does it communicate this value in these two senses, but it's also motivational. It has a tendency to awaken our consciousness. I mean, one of the things that we learn from social psychology and neuroscience is that when someone is angry, it motivates us to approach a particular target in ways in which fear, for example, motivates us to leave or go away from our particular target. So when one is angry, it's this motivational tendency that the emotion has that it motivates us to want to do something about the injustice. Not only that, it also makes us optimistic and make us believe that we actually can do something about it. And it also makes us less risk averse. So we see all of this happening at these protests. And I'm centering protests, but I think there's a lot of people who may not be present at the protests who are also angry. And so their anger may not be motivating them to join protests, but it's also motivating them to do some other organizing work as well, to write articles like I've done as well. So each person has their part. And I think anger is motivating them to do their part in ways that I think other emotions may not have that particular tendency. So it's communicative, it's motivational, but last but not least, I think it's radical. I think what it's doing is breaking what I call racial rules, right? And the racial rule in America is that when injustice occurs, we should be silent about it. And I think that when one expresses anger at racial injustice, one is violating that rule. I think another racial rule in America is that Black folks are not valuable. And they're not worthy to speak out on a pun. They're not worthy of our emotions. And I think that when someone is angry at racial injustice, they are also breaking that particular rule. So I think the role of anger is that it's communicating value. It's motivating us to do something about this injustice. And it's also radical in that it's breaking these racial rules that America seems to hold very tight to.
Now, a lot of the ways that this anger is manifest is through violence. Do you think that the media misrepresents violence at protests like these?
Now it's interesting because in the news lately, particularly the last couple of years, when we think about the murders that have happened at protests, the murders were not perpetrated by protesters, right? So when we go back to Charlottesville, the person who died was killed by white supremacists. When we think about what recently happened last week, this weekend, the murder that occurred was perpetrated by what some refer to as a white supremacist. So I'm scratching my head and I'm trying to figure out, is they're trying to make synonymous with violence and trying to suggest that what we should be most concerned about is the anger of protesters because they're going to lead to these kind of these murderous kinds of situations. But I think the empirical evidence is clear that the violence that we should be most concerned about, particularly when it comes to lives, is the violence that's being in response to the murder of protesters. You know, usually when I have these conversations with people all the time, and one of the things that people are most concerned about is that when I talk about anger, people are immediately concerned about violence. I think there are a variety of different kinds of violence. And if I had time to argue, we can talk about is property violence ever justified? And I think for these protesters, they're simply suggesting that particularly in a capitalist society, when we begin to value cars or value businesses over Black lives, that is the problem. Mm. Yes, go ahead.
What about the citizens of Kenosha who are against protests, that protesters who've taken law and order into their own hands? So, for instance, I'm talking about violence from the other side. We've seen armed white men patrolling the streets of Kenosha, part of a so-called citizens' militia. How worried are you about the anger and violence from that side and their justifications for it?
Yeah, so here's the thing. I'm not surprised, right? There's always going to be a backlash. I think what I'm most worried about is the ways in which the police have treated them. And so we see kind of a footage of the police thanking them, giving them water. What I'm most concerned about is the way in which the media is even portraying kind of what they're doing. And so I expect in any kind of movement, there's going to be backlash. I think what's most concerning to me is institutions or police or the media really not speaking out or giving that kind of the attention or the combination that it deserves. And I think that's the thing that makes it much more worrisome. But here's the thing. I think this is where courage, we need to really pay respect as much as we're criticizing these protesters. I think what they're doing is praiseworthy, particularly given that there's been these violence, these quote unquote militias, they're really gangs that have come out to stand in opposition, to spark fear in these protesters. They're still standing strong. And I think they should be praised. I think that shows, once again, their value for justice, that they're willing to sacrifice themselves, sacrifice COVID transmission, sacrifice police brutality. And so as much as I am concerned about these militias and all that stuff is happening, this has just been the reality of protesting in America. It's never been a safe endeavor. It has never been absent of opposition. I think the police needs to wake up and protect these protesters from that. I think the media needs to do a better job of condemning these kinds of things. But I think it just illuminates how fed up people are, that they're willing to make a sacrifice to even fall victim to these particular things.
How do we distinguish then between useful, productive anger, an engine of positive change, as you describe it, and the politics of rage that have become characteristic of Trump and the far right? Anger as a divisive mechanism, or as he calls it, un-American behavior.
Yeah, so here's the interesting thing that I find, particularly anger directed at racial injustice. So it has a certain kind of target, right? It's targeted at racism. And you know, there's something at least morally disconcerting about that, even particularly for people who we think express racist behavior. They are adamant by suggesting that they're not racist, which in some way they know that racism is wrong to some certain extent, right? So the anger is targeted towards this thing that we find to be morally outrageous, right? But when we think about anger on the flip side, it's not necessarily directed at racism. It's directed at scapegoats, right? So that's one kind of way that we can distinguish the two. Another kind of distinction that I think is important is that I think the rage that these protesters have, I think the rage that a lot of people have directed at racism, at racial injustice, is that it's inclusive, right? So this anger, they're thinking about everyone, right? They're thinking about immigrants. They're thinking about Muslims. They're thinking about Black and brown folk. But when we think about anger on the other side, they're only thinking about white folks, right? They're only thinking about people in power, right? And I think another distinction that I think is important is that this anger is directed at change, right? A positive change, a radical change so that we can live up to the principles, particularly in America, that we say that we hold dear. But on the flip side, when we see the anger of white supremacists, for example, their anger is aimed at maintaining the status quo. And I think that's the distinction here. Here's the, you know, one of the things that I think that is problematic about is the mischaracterization of this anger, right? That it's irrational, for example, or that it's distractive. And I think in some ways that's the whole point of the anger, is to be distractive, right? It wants us to distract us from business as usual, to wake up to the injustice that's happening, to get us back to be committed to the principles that we say that we're fully about. And it responds to divisiveness, right? It is not necessarily, divisiveness exists. I mean, that's the reason why the anger exists in the first place, right? It's a recognition that America is divided and between the haves and the haves not, that is based on skin color, that is based on class. The anger is a response to the divisiveness. It doesn't create it. And I think once we begin to see these distinctions and stop painting anger with these broad strokes, I think we can begin to understand the anger, recognize the message that it's trying to communicate, and hopefully allow this anger to challenge us and move us in the right direction.
Maisha Cherry, thank you very much indeed.